The Virginia Voice presents What's Your Story? Our program is based on the idea that everybody has a story to tell. All you have to do is ask. Now, here's the host of What's Your Story, Don Dale.
Hello, and welcome once again to What's Your Story? My guest this time is David Pippin, who is a horticulturalist, a floral designer, a teacher, a garden consultant. That's a mouthful. That's a lot of things.
I do a lot of things.
Let me ask you to start off the question we usually start with, which almost always prompts a conversation. What's your earliest childhood memory, David?
Earliest childhood memory? Probably something on my grandparents' farm.
You grew up on a farm?
I grew up next door to my grandparents' farm. So all of my childhood memories sort of lead back to the farm, which I guess prompted my career.
Well, that's interesting. Where was this?
In Louisa County.
Which is not that far from here, maybe an hour?
About an hour from Richmond.
Right. And what was the farm like?
Just a small family farm, about 100 acres. And my grandparents always had a vegetable garden. Had a couple of multipurpose cows, you know, beef cows, dairy cows, mm-hmm. kind of thing. We always had a pony for riding.
So you had a pony?
I did have a pony.
You actually had a pony?
I did, but since we didn't have a place to keep the pony, it was next door at my grandparents' house. And they always had, you know, chickens and ducks and that type of thing. So not a big production farm, but basically just a family farm.
And I'm sure you ate well.
Always.
Yeah. Do you think that is the genesis of your interest in horticulture?
I'm pretty sure.
Yeah? Did your grandparents and your mom raise flowers and plants?
Not really flowers. I mean, Mom would always have some flowers in the garden. Neither of my grandmothers arranged flowers or grew flowers. Once in a while, there'd be some flowers in the garden, but not so much for cutting. My great-grandmother lived in Richmond, and whenever we came to visit her, she grew flowers that she would cut, and she would send us home with hands full and arms full of cut flowers from the garden. And recently, as I was doing some genealogy research, I found a photograph of another great-grandmother that I never knew actually arranging flowers.
Wow.
And I thought, oh my goodness, maybe that's where I got it.
So I
asked my mom, and it was her grandmother, and she said, you know, I don't know if, you know, she arranged a lot of flowers, and somebody just happened to snap that photograph of her arranging flowers from the garden.
But do you think there's a horticulture gene that runs in your family?
For the most part, no.
No?
I've trained my parents over the years. I've taught my dad how to prune, and he's become, you know, quite a gardener now that he's retired.
I'm struck by the image of the family going on with arms full of cut flowers. Do you remember what they were?
I do. She grew peonies, she grew roses, pansies, lily of the valley. She had a big magnolia tree, and she would, you know, cut the magnolia blossoms off and bring them in the house. And she would always take the flowers. I remember that one particular spring that she cut things and then wrapped them in wet paper towels, then in aluminum foil, and then wrapped them in a big bundle of newspaper. And we put them in the back of the car and took them home and cut them and put them in water. I have no idea how long they lasted, but I just remember, you know, as a child that we came to Richmond and went home with a lot of flowers.
A lot of what you just mentioned from my childhood and your childhood too, I'm sure, were deeply scented.
Very much so.
And that's not the case necessarily anymore.
No.
Roses, it's a 50-50 shot that's going to smell like a rose if you stick your nose in the
Most bag. Of the time, florist flowers are non-fragrant, especially roses. I think they've been crossbred to have bigger flowers, longer-lasting flowers, stronger stems, and they forgot about the fragrance. You know, stop and smell the roses.
And the smell of peonies.
And, yes, peonies and lily of the valley.
Yeah.
That's probably one of my favorite floral fragrances. And they're short-lived in the garden. Mm-hmm. So I tell clients all the time, if the lily of the valley is blooming when you're having your event, yes, you may have some. Otherwise, no, because what I find at the florist is not the best.
Yeah.
So I grow it in my garden now, and I have it available, that little two-week window in the spring, mm-hmm. and that's it.
So you grow them out back here?
I do.
We're sitting in David's house in the Carytown area. And you have a smallish backyard.
Very small, but packed full.
Yes. What else is there?
Right, lily. I tell people all the time that I put things in the garden, and if they start to outgrow the garden, I'll dig them up and give them away. Or if they're not doing what I want them to do, I'll dig them up and give them away, or they end up in the compost pile. Mm-hmm. Have the little rule, perform or get out. But other things in the garden, a few bulbs, you know, daffodils and hyacinths, that type of thing. I have herbs, rosemary, sage, thyme. Plant parsley every year. It's a biennial, so by planting it every year, I always have it, because what I planted last year will bolt and go to seed,
right.
This bloom and go to seed. But I always plant it because the butterflies come and lay their eggs on it, and the larvae eat the parsley, and that's good for them. But then the plants will flush back out, and then I can eat it. So it's a great...
Plus, you get to look at the butterflies.
Right, and I get to see the butterflies in the garden. I also have a couple of hydrangeas, a small camellia that I keep trimmed up, one Japanese maple tree,
mm-hmm.
Because, like you said, it's a row house backyard, so it's not very big.
Right.
And my favorite shrub is Nandina, and I have those instead mm-hmm. of a privacy fence.
Mm-hmm.
And it works nicely because I can sort of see into the neighbor's yard, and they can sort of see into mine, but if we're both in the yard at the same time, we don't have to carry on a conversation.
Right.
But we can peek through the shrubs and talk if we want to.
Back to Louisa. Did you went to school in Louisa?
I did. Went to Louisa High School.
And then what happened?
I went to Virginia Tech after that. But another big influence for me in horticulture was my high school horticulture teacher.
You had a horticulture teacher in high school?
Yes.
Now, would this be common?
In many states and in a lot of areas in Virginia, we do have horticulture programs in the high school. A lot of times attached to a vocational wing in the school or a vo-tech center, that type of thing. We were fortunate in Louisa that we had a vocational part of our high school, you know, with business classes, horticulture, auto mechanics, agriculture, a variety of different things. And they still have horticulture and agriculture at Louisa High School.
So you were very lucky.
Very, because that influenced my career. And I had a guidance counselor who tried to discourage me from taking horticulture classes because I was college-bound or college-prep student mm-hmm. taking those types of courses, and I had an interest in horticulture and wanted to take the horticulture classes, and she was trying to discourage me.
What, did she think you were going to be a farmer?
No, she just said that I was college-prep material and I really didn't need to be in a vocational course.
Ah.
And I continued with the college-prep courses, but was able to take the horticulture class as well. And my horticulture teacher, we had judging teams in horticulture, part of the Future Farmers of America, and he took me and several other students to a contest, and we won the contest, and then we ended up going to Virginia Tech, and the moment I saw it, I fell in love with the place and spent several days there at the State Future Farmers of America convention. As a result, that was the summer between my junior and senior year, I decided that I wanted to go to college. I was overwhelmed at first because here I was, you know, country boy and going to Blacksburg at the time, huge campus. Overwhelmed, but then sort of excited that here's this opportunity in front of me. I grew up outside of Charlottesville and saw the University of Virginia quite often,
mm-hmm.
but never thought about going there to school. Mm-hmm. But once I saw this big campus and saw the greenhouses, I saw the dairy farm on campus, I was like, wow, this is where I would like to go to school. So the guidance counselor explained to me what I needed to do in order to go to college, taking SATs and that type of thing. So I applied to one school, Virginia Tech.
Just one?
Just one.
And you got in.
And luckily, I got in. By today's standards, I don't know if I would have been accepted. But
I think we all harbor that same thought.
I know. Requirements are so strict
so
now.
So much more strict now.
But back then,
more expensive now.
Much more expensive. I think what I paid for 4 years there is what it costs to go there for 1 year now.
Exactly.
Or
same
more.
Me.
Or more.
Did you live on campus?
I did. I lived on campus for 2 years and then moved off campus to an apartment. And to get to campus, if I were walking to campus, I had to walk past the beef barns and the horse barns, and it was like living on a farm but going to school, so I was very happy.
Can you teach taste? I'm sure you can teach horticulture. But talking about the other aspects of your career, the ones that had to do with design, where did you learn that?
I'm not really sure. I guess it's somewhat taught. You know, I think my parents have great taste. My mom, we didn't have a decorator. She decorated the home herself. My grandmother's the same way. And I learned a lot from them about, I guess, my style or style in general. And then I think some of my past places of employment, I learned a lot there, some of it in college. And just by rolling it all together over the past 30 years is what's made me me.
What did you learn at Tech?
I was an agricultural education major. My concentration was horticulture, but I took all different types of agricultural courses: animal science, agricultural engineering, agricultural economics, just a wide variety of agricultural courses, not all focusing on horticulture. So I learned a lot of those different things that I use now.
And when you graduated, what did you do?
Well, I wanted to be a horticulture teacher, just like
really?
I had done it in high school with my teacher, and there was one position open in the state of Virginia. So I applied, and I got that job, but after a week there, I realized it was not where I was meant to be. And
where was it?
It was in Charlotte County.
Okay.
And here I was, 22 years old, and even though I'd grown up in the country, I'd spent 4 years in Blacksburg in an apartment complex surrounded by friends, very active, and then moved to Charlotte County in the middle of nowhere.
Right.
And I was not happy. And of course, this was, you know, pre-cell phones, pre-computers, mm-hmm. and, you know, if I went to work in the afternoon, or all day, and then came home, there was nothing to do. There was no one around. I was in the middle of nowhere. So I hadn't signed my contract, and I told my father I wasn't happy, and he said, if you haven't signed your contract, then just move home. And they were some of the best words I'd ever heard, and yeah. I was so thankful. So I turned in my contract unsigned. School had not started yet. And I moved back home, and I got a job as a waiter in Charlottesville. And I remember my grandmother almost crying. Here I was, a college graduate, and I was working as a waiter. But everyone that I worked with was either a student at the University of Virginia or they had recently graduated from college. We were all sort of in the same position. So I stayed there for a few months, made some money, paid off some school loans, and found a job working in a retail florist in Charlottesville. And that was a great opportunity, and I learned more. I had taken one floral design class in college and had learned a few things in floral design in high school, but that year that I worked at the florist in Charlottesville, I learned so much about the business, and that was a huge help. And once I left Charlottesville, I moved to Richmond to teach high school horticulture. I sort of followed my dream. I had student taught at Lee Davis High School in Mechanicsville.
Mm-hmm.
And my cooperating teacher called me a year later, and he said, I've decided to change careers, and if you would like my job, I will recommend you for it. So he did, and I applied and got the job, and I was a high school horticulture teacher for 3 years at Lee Davis High School.
So that's what brought you to the Richmond area?
Yes.
And you stayed there for 3 years. What did you do after that?
After 3 years there, I went back to a retail florist here in Richmond. It's no longer in business. It was Four Seasons Flowers.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd worked there part-time while I was teaching school and thoroughly enjoyed it. It was a very creative firm, doing all kinds of big parties and big weddings and sort of cutting-edge stuff back in the mid-'80s. And I learned even more there and took a lot of things I learned there, you know, back to Lee Davis to teach my students. And by the end of that third year, I realized that I wanted to work in the floral industry full-time. So I told them I was interested in coming on full-time if they were interested, and I took a cut in pay and went to work in the florist full-time. And I know it's hard to believe, cut in pay from a teacher's salary.
Yeah.
but I did, and I worked there doing a variety of different things starting off. I didn't start off as a designer. I worked there processing flowers, sweeping the floor.
Wait, Processing flowers?
Processing flowers. When flowers are shipped in from the wholesale florist, they have to be unpacked from boxes and cut and put in water with floral preservative and those types of things. So I did that. I had to do some delivery work, and that was a great way to learn my way around Richmond. This is before we had a GPS, so I had to read the map and figure out where Midlothian Turnpike was located. I hadn't ventured across the river very much at that point, but I learned a lot about Richmond by delivering flowers on Mother's Day, and I made many trips one weekend from the Fan District to the far west end, and you know, I would get back to the shop thinking, oh, it's over, and there would be another van load of flowers waiting for me to go right back to where I just came from.
What are the big days for florists? It's Mother's Day, Valentine's Day?
Easter somewhat, and then, you know, the Christmas season, starting at Thanksgiving and, you know, running right through Christmas. Valentine's Day is probably the biggest floral holiday, followed by Mother's Day, and then Easter.
You were now doing what it was, in a way, that you would spend the rest of your career doing.
Yeah, pretty much. I started my own company 11 years ago, doing all those things that you mentioned at the beginning of the interview. And I sort of picked the things that I liked and made my own job, doing floral design work, teaching, garden consulting, all those types of things. I picked the stuff that I really liked and made David Pippin Incorporated.
What is the biggest mistake people make when they start with the floral design?
With one particular arrangement? I think they forget about proportion. So often, you know, people go by the florist or the grocery store and they pick up a mixed bunch of flowers and they think, okay, they're the flowers, and they're afraid to cut the stems any shorter, and they may cut a little bit off the bottom, and they drop them in a vase, and they all just sort of flop out to the sides, and they don't think about the proportion of the container they're putting them in, and they're like, oh, I can't arrange flowers.
And they give up.
They give up, and they never do it again. But if you look at the size of your container, look at the length of the flower stems, and keep them in proportion. A good general rule of thumb is just to make your flowers, you know, 1.5 to 2x the height of the container, and that's going to help. If you have a vase with a very large opening, put some foliage in first that's going to help hold the flowers in place. So often people put one big stem of flowers in the center and it falls off to the side, and then they try to prop it up with another flower and they end up making a big old mess. So I tell people all the time, put foliage in first, and that's going to help hold the flowers up, and it works. And don't put foliage underwater, because it'll start to rot and smell bad.
Somebody told me that a birth control pill is a great way to keep the flowers fresh. Is that? Have you ever heard that?
I know nothing about birth control pills, but there are all kinds of home remedies for helping flowers last longer. I've heard putting an aspirin in the water, putting a little bit of clear soft drink in the water, or a little bit of sugar in the water, and those things do help.
What is it that the flowers are sucking up? What is it that they need?
Well, taking up some sugars, and then sometimes some of the home mixtures I've read recommend putting a few drops of bleach in the water with a little bit of sugar, and that way the bleach helps cut down on bacteria build up in the water, and then the sugar helps feed the flowers and foliage for the time that they're going to be in the vase. But you know, most cut flowers only last a week, two at the most, and occasionally you can find those that last a bit longer. I've experimented putting, you know, floral preservative in the water and not, and it does help keep the water clean and clearer, but I'm not really sure if it makes them last that much longer, because they're already cut, so they're going to die anyway.
Yeah. This time of year, there's just daffodils all over the place, a little early.
Way early.
Yeah. People make the exact mistake you're thinking. Just cut some daffodils and put them in the vase. But you would suggest cutting some of the daffodil foliage as well.
The daffodil foliage, or using some other type of foliage from the garden. Boxwood is a great holder. So if you have, you know, big boxwoods, you're helping the boxwood by thinning that out a little bit, putting some of that in the vase, and then sticking a few daffodils in with it. And the boxwood will hold the daffodils up.
Garden consulting. Does that mean you come take a look at somebody's bare dirt yard and say, this is what you need?
I do. I will walk and talk with clients around their gardens and tell them what they need to do, because so often people are in their own space and they can't figure out what to do. And most people don't know plant material. They have no idea what to put where. They'll go to the nursery. They'll see plant material that they like, buy it, bring it home, plant it, have no idea how large it's going to be. That's a common mistake that I've seen. People find something in a one-gallon container. They bring it home and plant it. And in 5 years, it's, you know, pushing the eaves, you know, of the house. And they didn't realize it's going to grow to be 40 feet tall because they bought it as a very small plant. So I always tell clients, plant for mature size and know what the plant's going to do in 5, 10, 20 years down the road. And you talked about a bare lot. I've had the exact opposite sometimes. People have bought homes that have established landscapes and they're not sure what to do with them. So we have to talk about pruning or what plants need to be removed that they've sort of done their thing and it's time to take them out. Plants don't live forever.
Azaleas are commonplace here.
They are.
What do you think?
I like azaleas, but I don't think they're the perfect foundation plant. I like to see azaleas out under large trees. They're a great understory plant. They're beautiful in the woodlands because they give us that burst of color for a few weeks in the spring, and then they just turn into a green shrub, and they're not that exciting. I never use them as a foundation planting in front of the house. They're okay if you have a large front yard, I think, with larger trees, and they can be clustered there, but not planted in a row in front of the house. And we see that all the time, not just in Richmond, but all over the South.
Do you get tired of them?
Azaleas? I wouldn't say tired of them. I'm intrigued by some of the newer varieties, and I like that burst of color in the spring. Once we see the azaleas in bloom, spring is
here.
You
know it's spring. Yeah.
It is spring. I mean, we're seeing the daffodils now, but the azaleas will be here soon. I was checking some of the varieties this past weekend, and their flower buds are starting to swell, so spring is on the way.
What have we covered? We've covered horticulturalism, floral design, garden consulting, and teaching. And when I came in, you said that you had been grading papers.
Yes.
So you still haven't gone that far from teaching.
I still teach. I've been an adjunct professor at J. Sargent Reynolds Community College for 6 years, teaching floral design. And that's in the horticulture department. I've not taught other horticulture classes. That's now more focused teaching, introduction to floral design, and two different advanced floral design classes. And several years ago, we developed a Christmas decor for the home. So I've been teaching those four courses now at Reynolds. And my students range in age from 18 to 80.
Really?
So
80?
80. And my oldest student has been 80. So it's quite different from teaching high school horticulture.
I was going to ask you, what do your students want out of the course? Are they planning a career, or but an 80-year-old is not planning a career?
No, the students that I've had, or that I do have at Reynolds, they're there for different reasons. I have some who just want to know how to arrange flowers for themselves. A lot of my students are garden club members, and they just want to, you know, beef up their skills in floral design so that they can go back to garden club and win those blue ribbons. I have some students who are interested in working in a florist, and other students who are interested in actually starting their own floral business.
When somebody hires you to create a floral setting for their home, whether it's something big like a wedding or something like a dinner party, budget is obviously a consideration, but how big a factor do you think it is?
I've done flowers for all budgets. I had a mother of the bride recently, probably the perfect example. She said, what is the average wedding cost as far as flowers are concerned? Or she said, what do you do weddings for? And I said, you know, I've done wedding flowers that have cost $500, and I've done weddings for $15,000 to $20,000. And she sort of gasped and said, well, I think we need to be somewhere in the middle. Which is, you know, fine, because everyone has a budget, whether it's a low budget or a high budget. Everyone has a budget. And I'm able to work with all of those. For those lower budgets, I tell people we can give big bang for the money by using fewer flowers, and there are ways to achieve big bang. Quantity is not always the big bang.
Right.
And that works out well.
What do you do when somebody says, I have a budget of $20,000 for flowers for a wedding? Do you start to salivate and think, oh, boy.
I may squeal a little bit internally that I've found another client who wants to spend a lot of money on wedding flowers.
But do you go for expensive flowers?
And that helps, because sometimes people have, you know, big dreams, and then when you tell them how much some of those flowers actually cost, they can't use, you know, all of those expensive flowers.
What is expensive? What's an expensive flower?
Miniature calla lilies are probably one of the most expensive. We talked about Lily of the Valley earlier. Mm-hmm. That's very expensive if you buy it from the florist. Orchids and tropical flowers are expensive. And, you know, then we have the less expensive flowers that can give big bang. Alstroemeria, carnations, and so often people just are offended by carnations. They think of them as a funeral flower, but if you look at floral trade magazines, carnations are making a big comeback with new colors, new varieties, different textures to some of the petals. I had a bride last year tell me that a bridesmaid's bouquet was nothing but a blob of color in front of a dress. Mm-hmm. So she said, I really don't care what they are, and I have this amount of money, and I want you to do the flowers. So we were able to use some naturally pale green carnations with some lavender alstroemeria, with a few lavender roses tucked in, and they were beautiful small bouquets, and she was very excited that we could have a few of her favorite lavender roses in there with other flowers just to fill in.
Mm-hmm.
And it worked. But then I've had, you know, other brides who don't want to use the less expensive flowers, and we have to spend, you know, more money for bouquets, centerpieces, and that type of thing, because they want roses and orchids and miniature calla lilies, and it's fine.
I know you do a lot of what I would naively perhaps call high-end work.
Mm-hmm.
You're doing a dinner party for 12, 16, 20 people in someone's home. Where do you put the flowers? On the table?
It depends on the dining room. Sometimes we'll do what I call a low and long centerpiece, or several small centerpieces on the table, depending on the size. Or maybe we don't do flowers on the table at all, but we decorate the room. Decorating the mantle, the sideboard, a foyer table, coffee table, or something like that, and have other flowers in the home, but not necessarily on the dining table if there are going to be, you know, a lot of dishes, and if it's not a served dinner and they have, you know, serving dishes mm-hmm. on the table, if it's not being served, then there may not be room for centerpieces. So we do flowers elsewhere in the home.
What aspect of what you do, the litany that we mentioned at the beginning, and we're talking with David Pippin, who is a horticulturalist, floral designer, teacher, and garden consultant, what aspect of your work are you most passionate about?
Probably the teaching.
Really? We're back to the teaching.
Because I love sharing my knowledge with others.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I mentioned my community college students, you know, in range from 18 to 80, but I've also been hired to be an in-school field trip at several elementary schools and work with schools to be a garden consultant there with teaching gardens.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had students as young as 5 teaching them about plants and gardening. And that's always interesting to watch their eyes light up when I tell them interesting facts about plants, or I take, you know, fun garden plants to the classroom for them to learn.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't mention that I've worked at Lewis Skinner Botanical Garden for 7 years in the education department. All this time out of college, I've worked in horticulture and education the entire time except for the few months as a waiter.
The passion. Where does the passion come from? I mean, is it a culmination of lifetime experience, or is it, what does it tap into in you that makes you so happy to teach?
I think just sharing, you know, my knowledge about plants and gardening with others and watching them learn and become excited about it, and then sharing with their family and friends. A perfect example is a friend's son who couldn't quite figure out what he wanted to do, and I helped him find a job a couple of years ago at a greenhouse.
Mm-hmm.
And he's now taking classes at J. Sargent Reynolds in horticulture, and he's happy. And his mom thanked me, and she said, thank you for helping him find his way in horticulture.
Mm-hmm.
Because he hadn't taken horticulture in high school, and he wasn't quite aware of it, and he loves the outdoors and that type of thing. And she said he couldn't be happier. And that makes me happy that I've shared my knowledge with a young person, and carrying on, you know, what I started years ago.
Mm-hmm. What's next for you? Are you? Is there something, a goal that you
still have your eyes set on? What's next? It's not retirement, that's for sure.
Not old enough to retire.
I wish. I don't think I'll ever retire.
No?
A friend asked me recently, when I plan to retire, and I said, when I die or they put me in the home, because I don't know where I am or what I'm doing.
When you can't tell your carnation from your roses.
Right.
Anymore.
But I thought, you know, I can teach. I may not be able to physically carry big, giant buckets of flowers around anymore, but I can still teach as long as I'm mentally sane. But, you know, since I've been in business for 11 years, my business has changed somewhat. There were things I used to do that I no longer do. I used to do container gardening for clients, and that was something I slowly phased out.
Because you just didn't want to do it?
Well, I was having problems with the shoulder, and I thought, you know, I don't need to be lifting big pots and big bags of soil and that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
If I do any of that, it's in my garden and not in someone else's.
So you can shape what you do according to what is physically possible and what you like to do.
Right.
And that's a pretty good definition of a great job.
Right. That's why I said I don't want to retire. Yeah. Because I set my hours and I pick and choose what I want to do and when I want to do it.
Do you work alone?
Most of the time. I do have friends who help as needed. I have a friend who's retired, and when I call her, and she'll come help do flowers. So it's great. I have other friends who've said, you know, I have the day off, and I love one friend's term, florista princess. She says, I want to be a florista princess. So she came and worked with me one day, and she called me the next day, and she said, you know, being a florista princess is not easy. She said, I got home from working with you all day, and she said, I was so tired I had to take a nap. And everyone thinks floral work is pretty, and they see the finished product. Mm. They don't realize the back-breaking labor that goes into it and the hours that go into putting it all together to make it pretty for that wedding or a dinner party or whatever you're doing.
We are recording this in the early part of March, and the daffodils are in bloom. What's next in your garden?
In my garden?
What are you going to plant this year?
More vegetables.
Vegetables.
Had a few last year, and it was great.
What do you grow, tomatoes?
Well, you have to have tomatoes.
Of course.
We're Southerners.
Exactly.
I think back to Steel Magnolias and Shirley MacLaine talking about growing tomatoes. I mean, an old Southern woman, well, old Southern men grow tomatoes too because we love them. Yeah. And finding that first ripe tomato in the summer, that's, you know, so exciting.
My dad used to get the first ripe tomato out of his garden, and he would come in and stand over the kitchen sink with the tomato in one hand, a salt shaker in the other, and the tomato juice just dripping down into the sink. Do you do that?
My tomato never makes it into the house.
So, yes, I do that.
I mean, I don't even worry about the salt shaker. I mean, that first ripe tomato in the garden, it gets eaten right there.
So what else is going to be planted this year?
Probably do some beans and squash.
Mm-hmm. A squash.
Yeah, I love that. And then, of course, you know, the herbs.
I don't grow squash. People give me squash
right
now. I gave up on growing it.
And, you know, last year I planted a garden with a friend and at his house because he has more space. And that was great to be able to share the produce. And I helped do some work in his yard last week, sort of getting ready for vegetable planting, even though it is early March, but we're ready.
The seed catalogs arrived, a month ago?
Yeah, at least. And, you know, we were making our list of what do we want to plant and have in the garden for this summer, and we both immediately said tomatoes and squash, and we'll see what else we have space for.
Mm-hmm.
So last year, we several times harvested enough tomatoes to make homemade tomato sauce and spaghetti, so it was perfect.
Yeah, it's the pleasure of the gardening itself, and then you get to eat the results.
Right,
and it could be better.
It made me wish that I had planted, you know, three times as many tomatoes last year. I think we had, you know, five or six plants, and it, you know, a couple times we harvested 5 to 10 pounds of tomatoes in 1 week, so that we could make that big pot of sauce. So I want more.
Yeah, yeah. David, thank you for being my guest today on What's Your Story. David Pippin, a horticulturalist, floral designer, teacher, garden consultant, and gardener in his own backyard, Thank you for being my guest. I'm Don Dale, and I hope you'll join us next time on the Virginia Voice for What's Your Story?
You've been listening to What's Your Story with Don Dale. If you know somebody with a story to tell, or if you'd like to tell your own story, telephone the Virginia Voice, 804-266-2477. And be sure to join us next time for What's Your Story? This is Charles Mink speaking, and this is the Virginia Voice.